You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sharpen your pencils and get your notebooks out. It's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Phantom.
Welcome once again, weary, tired souls. Oh, pilgrims of footballology to our little ivory tower. Yes. Once again, it's the Star Seminar, your team-taught course in advanced graduate-level football analysis led by, of course, yours truly, Dr. Rabble Rouser, and as always, my colleague, Dr. Danny Phantom, also known as Sweet Danny P. How are you today, sir?
I'm okay. I mean, I am never known as that. You know, for the record.
Oh, you were always Sweet Danny P to me, baby.
You know, I'm doing okay, Rabs. I'm just trying to get through this tough part.
That's why I said weary pilgrims, because it is tough, ain't it?
It is. We go into it expecting it to be tough, but I can't recall a year like this one. I mean, I feel like there's been so many, even like, I would say, quote unquote, sensible Cowboys followers that have basically just, I mean, turned into chicken littles. It's just, mm-hmm. I mean, it's insane how many people are just given completely up on this Cowboys front office. That's brought out some pretty harsh criticism. And you know where I stand on a lot of this. And I mean, I honestly can't even really do my normal criticism because it's just, there's just so much out there going on. It's kind of tough. It makes it kind of tough. And I don't know how you're coping with things. But you know, I find myself getting in discussions and trying to get people off the ledge. It's kind of what I do at this time of year. But it's exhausting, I will say.
I have to say, my life is so busy that I don't have time to engage right now with all that. I mean, I see it, you know, I see it, and you're absolutely right. You know, everybody's piling on, and, you know, we've talked many a time about how if people want to chase a feeling to get rid of the bad feeling they have because they are publicly humiliated because their friends are their Cowboy fans and Green Bay destroyed Dallas in the last game. And so they want something to wash that taste out of their mouth. And the Cowboys aren't giving them anything because they're not signing one of the 40 players in the NFL that those people actually know. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to get that feeling. And so that makes them mad. And, you know, this is it's the same sort of impulse that leads fans to want coaches that yell at players on the sidelines, right? They want players to feel their ire, which is really just a byproduct of the fact that, you know, they're embarrassed or whatever. And I don't know. I just feel like you got to have more going on in your life than that. Because if it's getting you that riled up, something that's totally outside of your control, then maybe you need to focus on things you can control more. But I do think that it's probably prudent for us to just kind of frame some of the discussion and talk about where we sit with it, because we are not, in fact, chicken littles. We are chicken bigs, my friend. And so I think there's a couple topics. So let me just run out of the topics, and if you agree, then we can kind of discuss them in short order. How does that sound?
Yeah.
I think we need to talk about what's going on with Dak. There's been a lot of debate about Dak and what the fact that they have not really begun contract talks, what it might mean. I think it's important to just kind of have a reasonable perspective about free agency. And I think that that was actually provided to us recently by Mike McCarthy.
Yes.
I think we should talk about that. I want to reiterate a point that we made last week when we were talking about free agency, which is that free agency doesn't just start and end the first couple of weeks in March. It goes on all the way through the end of training camp, and the Cowboys have plenty of time to get free agents, most of whom will be just as good as the guys they could have got in week two of free mm-hmm. agency, and that's probably something that they're very well aware of, and that they're factoring into their strategy. And then, speaking of strategy, I think we got to talk about what the heck they're doing on the offensive line.
Yes.
But that actually is important also, because it's going to be where we start in looking at the 2024 NFL draft. It's
getting closer, Rabs.
It sure is. We're actually starting our draft coverage today, and we'll be continuing that all the way up until that glorious, glorious NFL Christmas. But before we do that, you remember, of course, that it's March, and there is madness happening. And to celebrate that, we have been talking about the Cowboys' most embarrassing, humiliating, or frustrating playoff defeats since they last won the Super Bowl in 1995, or more properly, January of 96. Mm-hmm. Last week, if you may recall, we covered the 90s losses and
yes.
the aughts losses. And this week, we are blessed with another collection of horrible defeats in the 2010s and the 2020s. So let's talk about that, and then we'll end up with our final four, which we can then finalize for the most humiliating playoff loss next week on the pod. So the two brackets, of course, are the 10s. We have 2014, where they actually beat, if you may remember, in a thriller at mm-hmm. home.
Yep.
Beat the Lions, and that was a game where Romo did his like little plank celebration,
yep. mm-hmm.
and then DeMarcus, a rookie DeMarcus Lawrence, got a sack and then fumbled it, and then followed that up like three plays later with a game-winning sack fumble and got the and actually recovered the fumble and didn't drop it this time. And in 2016, number one seeded Cowboys at home against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers get way behind early. Rally furiously, only to have a couple of heartbreaking plays at the end. One where Jeff Heath blitzes, knocks the crap out of Aaron Rodgers, hits the area around the ball, and somehow Rodgers does not fumble. And a couple of plays later, he hits a tight end Cooks along the sidelines. And then the subsequent play, Packers kick a long field goal to win the game. And then 2018, the Cowboys again win their first game in a close fashion at home, beating the Seahawks in a game in which that may have been, if not Dak Prescott's finest hour, one of his finest hours. He was absolutely magnificent
yes.
in that game.
Yes.
And people forget that when they talk about his playoff performances. He hooked that team on his shoulders and carried them like the man that he is. And then they went to L.A. and lost to a very talented Rams team that just ran up and down on them with a backup running back, CJ Anderson, gaining.
Yeah.
I think he had 3,500 yards in that game.
Something like that. Yeah.
So those are the three games in the tens. What do you think? Which one's the most embarrassing, humiliating, horrible to contemplate?
Well, I tell you what. All of those games were exciting to me. All of those games were games where I think the Cowboys had a good chance to win. If they weren't like the favorite, they were like really close to it. It's one of those where you believe that they had a legit chance every game, honestly. So I love that about this decade of options to compare to some of the ones we've talked about in the past last week. But I have nothing to say, but good things to say about the 14 team. I thought there was opportunities there. It's unfortunate how things turned out, but I'm not embarrassed by anything in that regard. And honestly, too, even as bad as things started out in the beginning of the 2016 game against the Packers, man, did that team fight. I mean, they fought and they got back in it, and it was actually one of those. It was almost a little bit like the 94 defeat to the 49ers, where they
Very
basically
similar.
they were out, and then look at them, look at them come back. And I mean, I felt proud of that team because they just, you know, they just kept fighting and they almost had a chance. So I'm just going to throw those two out because I don't think the nothing about those games, what happened in those games embarrassed me. It was embarrassing though to watch Todd Gurley and CJ Anderson run at will against the Cowboys when, I mean, the Cowboys actually had a chance in that one too. But when they failed to stop the run and basically couldn't even challenge a Jared Goff quarterback, who's not a bad quarterback, but he's not a good quarterback either, and couldn't even like put it on him to win, to beat you. That was tough. It was tough to stomach. We're just merciless against or helpless against stopping the Rams running game. And it was, that was disappointing. And the Cowboys did, you know, kind of just start to drift, and you can kind of see them falling out of that game. So I would have to say it's the Rams game. I was super excited when Amari Cooper caught that touchdown across the middle. It's like, you know, I felt like, you know, we got this. We're going to beat this team. And then, of course, it wasn't much longer before you realized that wasn't the case. So, but I'm taking the Rams game as the most embarrassing for me.
Okay. All right. You know, it's funny because that Rams game in retrospect also feels like, and I may be wrong, I need to do a little more research, but it feels like it marks the beginning of the Cowboys defense's inability to stop the sort of Shanahan style running games, right? Where they just, they play well week after week, and then they go up against a Shanahan running game and just suddenly they're a different team. They get obliterated. And that feels like that was like, because if you remember, that 2018 team was led by a resurgence in their linebacking unit by the rookie Van Der Esch, and suddenly Jalen Smith was playing outside of his out of his mind, playing right next to Van Der Esch, and we thought they might have the best linebacking core in the league for the next 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. Right, they were incredible that year, and so we thought, yeah, I mean, if anything, the defense is going to hold up. It's really just a matter of like, can the offense keep up with the Rams passing game? And it turned out none of that mattered because they couldn't stop the run. For me, however, the most embarrassing of those is the Packer game, because that was a really, really good Cowboys team. They still had a great offensive line. They had a great defensive line. Remember, David Irving was playing out of his mind and was an absolute wrecking ball. And, you know, they still had, of course, a lot of other, you know, good players along the defense. And to lose the comeback was noble, but to lose, or to fall that far behind, rather, an inferior Packers team at home when you had a week of rest was just, you know, that to me, that's embarrassing. So for me, anytime you have the home field advantage and lose it, you know, at home when you're the one seed to the team that's the lowest seed remaining in the tournament, that has to be most embarrassing. Although when we looked at the odds, you know, we chose the Vikings game over the 07 game, even though the 07 game was also the most embarrassing for me. So I, you know, either way, I'm happy to go either way. We can go with the Rams if you want.
I could go either way myself, but I will want to point out one thing about that Packers game is that, you know, and you mentioned this before, it's like there's so little that separates teams as far as, you know, the talent ability. And even though I do think, I mean, Cowboys were a more talented team, I agree with you there. But I tell you what, if you look at some of the plays that happened in that game, and like, I remember Aaron Rodgers like threading the needle, like the ball seemed like it went right through Sean Lee's hand. It's just like perfect play, perfect placement of the ball. Mm-hmm. There were so many just good luck moments for the Packers that happened in that game, to where it's not like, to me, I felt like the Cowboys just came out there and they're fell behind because they were just pathetic or something. So I feel like it was one of those things where the Packers just made really good plays early, but then the Cowboys fought back. And I mean, if it would have gone another quarter, I'd have no doubt in my mind the Cowboys would have won that game. It's just, you know, getting that hole early was just a bit much for them. And then, you know, I just think Green Bay just, they were the luckier team that year.
And honestly, like if we think about, give me 2023 Dak on that team and the Cowboys probably win. I mean, you know, the offense was limited. I mean, it was still, you know, he was a rookie and they were still tailoring the offense to him, and the offense was still focused on, you know, it was Zeke Elliott was the engine that
I tell you
drove that
what,
offense.
Dak, God, to his credit,
He was great in
played
that
well.
game.
I mean, a lot of quarterbacks would have just shriveled up, you know. And but I tell you, I mean, I was very impressed with for a rookie quarterback to come in there and almost beat Aaron Rodgers and come back like that. It was impressive.
Absolutely, and it's something they were not able to do in 23, which we're going to talk about in just a second. So let's just review the three losses in the beginning of this decade. Good news is three straight playoff berths, three straight 12-win seasons. Bad news is a divisional round or earlier loss each time. So 2021, play at home, lost to the 49ers. Again, 49ers got a big lead, hit them in the mouth early. Cowboys tried to mount a comeback. Comeback fell short. 2022, great win on the road against the hated Buccaneers. Cowboys, of course, were going to be on the road the whole time, probably because they did not win the division. Came home, then went on the road to San Francisco, and I actually think played quite well.
Yes, yes.
I think they would have had a really, really good chance of winning if Tony Pollard hadn't gone down. But it was very clear that their game plan was centered around Pollard because Zeke was done. And when he went down, I mean, they just were out of weapons. They just really didn't have much because it was basically Dak and CD. And if they doubled CD, it kept him out of the game. Dak didn't have many options. And then 23, of course, they got behind early by the Packers. And guess what? Didn't come back.
Nope.
Actually, it got worse.
Yep.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think it's debatable. I think 23 is the most humiliating of the losses in the last 3 years. Do you have anything you can do to contest that assertion?
No, not at all. I mean,
Okay.
it's insane. I will say this, though, regarding the 21 game against the Niners, that's a little disappointing, though, because
Absolutely.
I expected them to come out and play a little better. And I just it, I if it wasn't for just the horrendous display that we just saw, I think that would have a good chance to compete for in one. I just think they
No
got
question.
in a bad
No
bracket
question.
because this most recent Packers game is a number one seed for sure. And I can't even remember the last time I felt that embarrassed about a Cowboys game. So definitely 100% agree with you there.
All right, just to set the stage for our discussion next week, we have one from each decade. Our final four is the 1998 loss at home to the Jake Plummer-led Cardinals, the 2009 obliteration at the hands of the Vikings and Brett Favre, the 2018 loss to the Rams in which C.J. Anderson was basically taken off the scrap heap and ran for, as we said, 3,500 yards on 10 carries. So he had 350 yards a carry average. And then in 23, the humiliation at the hands of the Packers, in which there was no moment after about the 4th minute in the game in which the Cowboys were in the game. All right, so we're gonna take them to the Final Four next week, and we'll see which one was the most humiliating of all time. Which leads us, my friend, to our discussion of what most
Yes.
people think is our local humiliation, the Cowboys front office. I think we beg to differ, and so we outlined earlier what we're going to be talking about. Let's start at the top of that list with all the controversy swirling around the fact that Dak Prescott and his agent and the Cowboys front office have not begun contract negotiations. What do you make of all this kerfluffle?
That's exactly what it is. It's kerfluffle. I've gone on record saying that I have no doubt in my mind that the Cowboys are going to continue on with Dak Prescott. I didn't expect him to get an extension anytime sooner than this off season because he's in the final year of his deal. And I also have gone on record saying I expect it to happen near September timeframe and not right now. So I think I just want to say a couple things and then I'll give the floor to you and then I'll be done with it forever, hopefully. It's there's two things. Number one is Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. People, whether they want to agree to this or how much they agree to it, to what degree, is their own choice. But he is a good quarterback. I mean, he just finished second in MVP. I mean, I think we've seen enough from him to know what we have in him. There's no question that he is one of the top seven quarterbacks in this league. I feel strongly about that statement. Now, second part, you do not want to be a team that does not have a top seven quarterback. You certainly don't want to be a team that has a bottom 10 quarterback in the league. And that is what you're basically looking at if the Cowboys were to just up and decide to move on from Dak Prescott. The Cowboys have no contingency plan. We haven't seen Trey Lance play. He took zero reps last year in games when he was on when the Cowboys could have given him chances to see what they had. We didn't see him. There's no plan. The Cowboys are not going to just put their whole livelihood on the risk of some unknown. So to me, I think it's just absolutely crazy. Dak Prescott will get a new contract. He'll become the highest paid quarterback in the league, highest paid player in NFL history, because that's just how things work. And I don't have any doubt in my mind that that's going to happen.
Two things I want to disagree with. You said Dak Prescott's a good quarterback. I disagree vehemently. I think he's a great quarterback. I think he's probably even better than top seven.
Okay.
I think most people who are close observers of the league say he's one of the best or top two quarterbacks pre-snap in the league. And I think he's a very good quarterback after the snap, and particularly good in getting better when he's playing out of structure, when plays break down, et cetera. Nick Harris of DallasCowboys.com, who's pretty plugged in, recently said that he thinks that it's not going to be September, but it might be more like November. But I think that he's basically saying what you are, just with a couple months difference, which is that, yeah, they're not talking now, but they're going to talk. And I think the reason for that is that his agent is in no rush. Like, we saw that the first set of negotiations, he's in no rush because he knows the longer he waits, the more his client gets, right? So it's in his best interest to wait as long as possible. And then no matter what the Cowboys do, and they know that. And then the second is, they'd rather not spend that money this year. They'd rather spend that money next year. So I think that they're going to try to find a way to delay that as long as possible, to a moment when they're not paying a bunch of dead money to Zeke Elliott on the cap. And there's just, their cap has a lot more space on it, so they can accommodate that and other important contracts. So I agree with you. I think it's much ado about nothing.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The next thing that I think is important to talk about then also is, this notion that the Cowboys aren't doing anything. They've got all these holes. They're not addressing these holes. I think maybe indirectly, Mike McCarthy actually may have addressed that issue when he talked to the press a day or two ago. And I'd love to hear you expound upon that, because you were talking before we started recording about this, and I think you made some really good points. So do you want to kind of share with everyone what you were talking to me about?
Yeah, I think, first off, I want to say I think it was one of McCarthy's finest moments in a Cowboys interview. I've never felt more proud of him, because everybody talks about him being in a lame duck year. This is just mm-hmm. formality. He's in trouble. You know, the Cowboys are setting him up for failure or whatever, blah, blah. McCarthy is unfazed by this. And this is when things really started to grow for me with Jason Garrett, because I remember in 2014, like, this guy's toast. You know, I mean, look what's, we just cut DeMarcus Ware, you know, just, the mm-hmm. It's like, what, you know, the three straight 8-8 seasons, it's not going to get any better. And then, of course, you know, it did. But it wasn't just the words that McCarthy said. It was the confidence in which he said them. And this guy firmly believes, and he's been doing this a long time, and he knows, he has a good feel for things. And the things that really jumped out at me is that he said he believes in the players they have on the roster. And of course, that's, you know, sounds like coach speak, whatever. But he talks about the second year players and even third year players that, you know, looking to make a bigger jump and contribution. And I think if you really focus in on that, you could realize that, hey, there's some players here that we're going to want to see more of than some free agent signing that the Cowboys could go out there and make. So that, to me, I think resonated. But I think you look at those players, and I want to ask you, and we'll go talk about these players in a little bit more detail, but I think when you look at the players they have on the roster, that's going to stronger contribution, the upcoming draft, where they're going to have another draft class of new players to work with, and then also just other free agents that are still out there that they can plug holes in later after they get a better sense of where their holes are on the roster. I think there's still, you know, three other avenues left to get better. And I expect that to happen. And I believe what McCarthy's saying. But I wanted to focus in on that first part where he's talking about second and third year players that could step up and make a big difference. So I want to ask you, and we'll run through these players, but number one guy on your list, who are you looking forward to see that you think that people are, you know, or that he is going to make a much stronger contribution, you know, this year?
It's gotta be Marvin Overshown.
Yes,
right?
It does. Yeah. You're right.
But I think that there are, so let's look at the defense as a whole. I think there's someone at each level that is probably a guy who's like potentially this year's Marquise Bell, right? Who's a guy who we didn't see much of, but maybe flashed a little in camp. It doesn't mean he stopped being good. We have to remember, and we talked about this, I think, even last week, we have to remember that these guys see these cats in the building every day. We see none of that. We have no idea mm-hmm. how these guys conduct themselves, how they take notes, how they ask questions in position group, in their position group rooms, when they're with their position coaches, all that kind of stuff, which all is part of the picture. All we see is the snaps they take on Sunday. And if they're not getting snaps because it's a deep and talented team with a lot of veterans, then we think that they suck, or that we think that we forget about them. And there's guys, I think, who are getting ready to make the leap. And if you look at some of the dudes they let go, or some of the dudes they didn't hasten to resign, we can look at dudes who are playing those positions and say, oh, well, maybe there's a guy ready to step up. So I think Overshown's clear. I think Sam Williams is a guy they have to be betting on,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And I think that as at corner, we talked about this last week, if they don't resign Gilmore, it's because Bland is next Gilmore. And you say, okay, who's next Bland? I give you Eric Scott.
Yep.
They love Eric Scott. And he, you know, I think that they think that he could be the next like Bland or Marquise Bell, sort of late round draft pick who, you know, has the right makeup to get better and is doing so. And that's just on defense. Any thoughts about those cats on defense?
I think there's a couple of things. And, of course, I think Mozzie Smith, you know, I don't think you...
Absolutely. Mozzie Smith has to be on that list, too.
I think that I see a lot of those players, and I, you know, they actually... I wonder why, obviously, Overshown was injured, but I wonder why we didn't see more or anything of Eric Scott Jr. So I do have some pause about certain things. And, you know, year two, Mozzie, very interested to see how that's going to work out. But I'm certainly not, like, holding my breath for, like, or just going to assume that he's going to end up being that guy. But the fact that the Cowboys didn't go out there and spend some money on a nose tells me that Mike Zimmer must feel pretty good about what they have with Mozzie. So there's things about this that give me hope. So so we'll see. But I want to go the other side of the ball, and I'm just going to throw these names out here, and you tell me which ones you're most excited about. But offensively, we have Austin Richards, who had a really good training camp and preseason last season. Luke Schoonmaker, start with him, obviously, second round draft pick. We have the two Jalens. What Jalen Tolbert will be in year three. Jalen Brooks will be in his second year. You know, there are different moments. The team has expressed excitement about those young players, so they'll have a bit more opportunities without Michael Gallup around. And also a couple undrafted guys that I was intrigued with last year, starting with John Stevens Jr., the tight end, the athletic tight end that was just looking outstanding in training camp. And we're like, who's this guy, you know? And and in preseason before he got hurt, I'm excited about what he could bring in year two. And I think he could be a key part of this Cowboys passing attack. And of course, another one too is that flashed a little bit is David Durden, an undrafted free agent last year too. So those are some guys out there, Raps. Any of them that, like, do you think, okay, they're going to make a big impact from the Cowboys 2024?
Well, I don't know. And I don't know if the Cowboys do either, but here's the thing. And this is what you were gesturing toward earlier when you said that there's still other opportunities for free agents, because what the fans who are freaking out are thinking is we need to have starters at every position right now, right? I want to know my all 22 right now. We have to go back to Bill Parcells, and he's the one who sort of introduced to us this notion of the progress stopper. You don't want to bring in a veteran who's going to stop a young guy who's ascending from making progress, right? And so they believe that each of these guys that you just listed, and I would even add Matt Willetsko to that. He's been a little bit beat up, but I think there's still a lot of things they like about him still.
Yeah, you know? What? And also, I forgot to mention, and I don't even know why, but TJ Bass and Brock Hoffman are guys that need to be thrown in here as well. So
right. And so why bring in a middle-of-the-road free agent veteran when you have a guy who could actually be that good, if not better, if he just gets some seasoning? So I think the thing about that also is that, and we talked about this last week, the guys they could get now and the guys they can get before training camp or even after training camp are not that different. So I think that, so if that's the case, why not give the young guys as many reps as possible, as much seasoning as possible, and then you can fill in your holes after the draft. You don't have to do it in that order where in Jason Garrett order, where you draft and you fill free agency and then you draft pure. They can just draft pure and then fill in the holes afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I think that one quick thing as we transition now into the offensive lines, I know we want to talk about the offensive linemen who are available in this year's draft, which is that with that in mind, I think that one of the reasons they didn't resign someone like Chuma Edoga is because they want to see what Austin Richards and Matt Willetsko can do, right? And honestly, he's not that much better. And I think they might even look and say, hey, you know, I think Austin Richards can be every bit as good, if not better than the Chuma Edoga. Right. So let's give the kid a chance. And then we can sign a Chuma Edoga, right? I think the other thing is Cowboy fans have their panties in a wad because the Cowboys have left themselves, quote unquote, no choice but to draft an offensive lineman.
Oh my goodness.
And I submit to you that it's the opposite. The Cowboys, as they've done for years in the draft, are very good at looking at where the strengths in a draft are and drafting into those strengths. And they saw that this is one of the best offensive line classes in recent memory, if not in the last decade, and said, you know what? This is our chance to fortify an aging offensive line. Let's go do it, right? And so if you flip it that way, it's not that the Cowboys painted themselves into a corner where they have to take an offensive lineman. It's that they saw the bounty at offensive line and said, do we really need to pay our aging offensive tackle $20 million, or do we just bite the bullet and say, this is the year in which we're going to get an offensive lineman, which is what they did the year in 2011 when they got Tyron Smith. If you remember, they had like five or six first-round offensive tackles come to visit during the 30 visit. So with that in mind, I think we need to look at who some of these offensive linemen might be. And it seems to me they fall in a couple different categories, right? So there's a sort of like plug-and-play offensive tackles. There's plug-and-play interior linemen. Most of them are centers. And then there's also some high upside, potentially low floor kind of guys as well that who have a lot of athletic upside but have some questions that may be more likely to be there at 24. So I'll tell you what, why don't we start by talking about a couple of the offensive linemen I know you've had your eye on. You want to start us off with maybe a little discussion of, you know, Amarius Mims or the kid from Washington?
Yeah, I do. But I do want to start it off with, I want to talk about Fuaga just briefly because I know he's not expected to be there. He shouldn't. To me, he's a blue chip player. But I mean, I obviously, being a Beaver alum, just a big fan of him. And I think he's just,
he's a monster.
He's the one guy on here that, like, he's my best case scenario for the Cowboys pick. And I don't expect it to happen, but I think he's just, the guy is just enormous. He's just, I mean, big frame, great length, but not just big. He moves very well. He's got excellent footwork, slides effortlessly, which is really what you like to see from, you know, from offensive lines. They just can get to point A to B real quickly. Long hands. I mean, he moves well in space. He transitions very nice from one block to another. And again, I mean, he's on the top of my wish list. So that this is the one time I'll talk about him and never again, because I don't expect him to be there. I think he should go top 10 in my opinion. But Rabs, as you said, there's so many different guys, and you know, you never know the arrangement of how these guys are going. I mean, Fuaga is actually the number three tackle coming off the board. There's a couple others that will go, expect to go sooner. So, you know, you never know when one of these guys will fall. So I'm going to start with someone who's probably not going to be there. But I'm going to ask you to talk about the guy who I think the Cowboys will end up drafting. And I'm calling it right now, and that's Arizona's Jordan Morgan. Can you tell me? Give me some information about Jordan Morgan.
Yeah, I actually am ambivalent about Morgan. So if they do draft him, I might be a little troubled. But, you know, he also looks a lot like, you know, a guy we didn't like a couple years ago named Tyler Smith, who's now an All-Pro. Mm-hmm. So 6'5", 311, big kid. He might have to be a guard in the pros because he has short arms. That's the problem. But he's got massive hands. He runs a 5.4 40 with a 1.7 10-yard split. So he's very explosive out of the blocks. He's a little undersized. His explosion grade is only okay. I think he needs to do a better job of sinking his hands and his feet. But he's a really, really good foot athlete with good slide quickness. Gets a little too far outside at times. He's very strong at the top of the pass rep. Team captain. I mean, he checks a lot of boxes. And honestly, I fear what I think you're fearing as well, which is that the guys we really like, those top guys, the sort of Olu Fashinos, the Amarius Mims, those guys who are like obvious plug and play types, might go early, which is going to leave us with guys like Jordan Morgan or another guy who I think will be there, and he scares me, Tyler Guyton, right? Which is, you know, he's big kid, long arms, prototypical size, former tight end, great athlete, only okay speed and agility grades, you know, if you look at like RAS, but very plus pass pro with length, feet, body control, etc. But he's also like, his technique is terrible. He's always out of position. He's a leaner. He lunges too much. He worries the heck out of me, dude, because I wonder if he has is he coachable? He kind of got Wally pipped at OU by an obviously lesser player. He left TCU without getting much playing time. Is there a story there? What's going on with that? So it feels like if they go tackle, there's a couple of there's a handful of prototypical guys that we would be happy for them to draft, and there's a couple of other guys who would be we'd be okay with, but I would have some trepidation. And then there are the interior offensive linemen. I love both of those guys. I don't know if they'd go interior offensive lineman at 24, but I think that the two guys who make the most sense that they could go with, Graham Barton and JPJ, Jackson Powers Johnson, are both monsters, absolute monsters. They both have short arms and small hands. You know, they're not athletic marvels, but they're very, very good athletes, but they're smart, tenacious, mean, like feisty guys. And I think we've talked about this before, like the Cowboys could really use an infusion of just like, I want to hit all the way to the snap and maybe, or to the whistle and maybe even a little bit after. These guys both are salty. They have elite compete. They have heavy hands. They're bullies. They're good technicians. You know, Jackson Powers Johnson is a good, good pass protector. Downfield blocker. He's got a great demeanor. Graham Barton, I mean, such a fun player. He's the same snap to snap to snap. Great, great plus zone blocker and run. I mean, we want to talk about getting that interior run game going again. He's the guy who can bring it back. So I think personally, if they can't get one of the top offensive tackles, I'd almost rather see them get one of these two top interior offensive linemen, because there are fewer questions. And if you're going to get a first round offensive lineman, you're getting a guy who's likely to be a second contract 8 to 10 year player. Yes. So I want that guy to be, you know, I want consistency, you know, I want quality and I want compete.
Yeah.
In the guy I draft. I'm not really that interested in a high upside guy. I think you can get one of those guys later on and you give him a couple of years. So if we can't get a Darius Mims or honestly the guy who would be my I would be doing cartwheels if they could get him is Olafashanu. I love him. If they can't get one of those kind of guys, or your fellow Oregon State Beaver, then I think I'm leaning toward one of the big interior offensive linemen, and then you try to either get a guard later and kick Tyler Smith out, or you see what happens if you give the position to Austin Richards or Matt Waletzko.
Yeah, I think first off, I want to say I agree with you 100%, and I think that the guy that I'm going to be excited whoever the Cowboys pick at 24, I'm going to be excited about. If it's one of these guards that, you know, bring about some questions that we have, I don't care. I'm going to have confidence in them, because these guys, they hit it out of the park with these offensive linemen. They don't make mistakes. Now, normally I would kind of advocate against taking an interior lineman, especially a center in round one. Like, I don't think that's, because you're absolutely right. It needs to be a guy you're going to give a 8-year contract to at some point. But we're talking just the way this draft is laid out with quarterbacks, wide receivers, offensive tackles. You're going to get an all-pro center that could fall to you at that spot. So if you have a chance to get an all-pro center, I'm not going to complain about that at all. And you mentioned before, Tyler Smith is kind of that chess piece that allows you to do things, and you know, because you have a left tackle already on the roster, so I feel a lot better about someone like TJ Bass playing left guard if he's in between you know, the Oregon center and Tyler Smith. I mean, that's
talk about a bunch of road graders on the left side.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just going to be excited about anyone the Cowboys pick, but I do still think it's lining up to be a tackle. Another guy too that I like, and I, when I was watching, like going through combine and everything, was the Washington tackle, Troy, Fontenot, I think it's a, but, I felt like he seemed like he had short arms to me, but I think you looked it up and it was, his arms are fine. But I love the way he gets off the ball quickly. He looks to drive into contact rather than just popping out to the edge all the time. He's got fighting hands, constantly punchy. He can be a little loosey-goosey with his hands, I observed. And then he moves really well in space. I think he has good lateral agility. This is one of those guys, and of course he is starting to move up draft boards too, that I thought could end up being one of those sneaky good players that maybe doesn't get the name recognition as some of these other higher guys like Mims and you know, Fuaga and the blue chip guys, but could be a really end up being a surprise, a star in this league.
I think, you know, he's right there in my best realistic scenario, right? Like, I think that your fellow Beaver is probably not going to last.
Right.
I think that's a pipe dream. I think both Fontenot and Fashanu are probably going to go too early. But if one of those guys can fall, I love them, because I do think that as many assets as Mims has, he's a monster. He's a super athletic. He's probably got the highest upside of any of these guys. I think his floor is lower, and there's more questions about him. And I feel like both of these guys, you plug him in, and you've got a left tackle for a decade.
Yeah, I want to run through a couple real quick, and you give me your thoughts on them, because I know we got to wrap things up. But Amarius Mims still really high on my list. If we miss out on the Beaver, big guy, another big guy. I think he plays wide too. I like the way he just like sets himself wide. He's just I think he creates a really good, large wall. He's got good footwork. He slides into position well. He's still a raw player. You know, I noticed he only had 8 starts. I feel like he. High upside guy. JC Latham from Alabama, another big school tackled. Again, also wide frame. He kind of actually looks like a guard. When I watched him, I'm thinking he looks like a guard. He pops out well, good footwork, strong hands, locks in and drives on you. He can act in haste at times, can be a little lungy, I thought. Thought he didn't move very well in space. And I also thought his processing was a little off. He struggled making some adjustments. So, but I think those are some high risk, high reward type players. Thoughts on those two?
I think you captured, they're both high risk, high reward. I think Latham's probably only a right tackle. I'm not sure he has the feet to play left tackle. And I think the issue with Mims is he's got all the tools, right? He's gigantic, but he's only got maybe 800 college snaps. He's got less than a full season of college snaps. And so I just think there's just a lot of questions, you know. It's obviously a high upside pick, but you'd like a guy that has 2,500 snaps, so you really can evaluate. You know, he's, you know, you can see him play against guys who are going to be playing in the NFL, you know, on his college tape, and you see that with Mims, but you just don't see enough of it. So that's why he's a little bit more in the Guyton category for me, just because there's more questions about him than these other guys, largely just because of the fact that he just, you know, he doesn't have as much experience.
Yeah. So, Raps, give me a number here in percentage-wise. How confident are you Cowboys are taking an offensive lineman with pick 24?
Oh, absolutely 100%. Unless something really, really bizarre happens, like one of the top two receivers falls or something. I think that I would be shocked beyond belief if they don't go offense in the first round.
Yeah.
The high likelihood is that it's offensive line, unless, and the only other position that could unseat that would be wide receiver. And so I think it would have to be one of the top two guys.
I agree with you. I can't imagine it going any other way. I'll go 90% just because I don't, just to leave a little bit of room for, but I feel so strongly. I mean, I feel like pick 24 is already done. The only thing that's left to determine is what position?
Which one?
What position Tyler Smith is going to play? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be left tackle or is he going to be left guard? And that will all depend on whether they pick one of the top centers or the top offensive tackles. But I think we can pretty much lock that in without much doubt. So, but that is all we have for our show today. We ran through the offensive linemen this week. Next week, we plan on going through the skill positions. We'll look at some wide receivers and running backs. So if you have your eyes on certain players, we'll be talking about many of those. And if you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging the Boys podcast network. Leave us a rating, write a review wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iTunes, or Stitcher. Tell us what you think, anything you would like to do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, any Cowboys hot topics, any of your favorite draft prospects, or you know what is do you think is the Cowboys' most embarrassing playoff loss over the last 20 some odd years? Let us know. You can hit me up on Twitter. I'm at DannyPhantom24. Don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we have the World's Team with Paul Stewart and Mike Pullen, so make sure to check that out. But that's all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver blue. And we will catch you later.
Twitter, what's that? Surely you're making that up.
Support for this show comes from Pendo. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo also provides AI-powered product analytics that fuel in-app guides to deliver personalized guidance to customers directly inside your app. Visit pendo.io/podcast to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/podcast to learn more.